The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1 with All Care Pharmacy. Expert advice to keep the whole family healthy at All Care, the largest Irish-owned pharmacy brand.
Good afternoon on this Thursday afternoon. Thanks very much to Catherine for keeping the seat warm yesterday. As usual, if you want to contact the programme today, 51551 for texts or ray@rte.ie for emails. And we have to say congratulations to Vicky Phelan. Her book, Overcoming, won the RTE Radio 1 Listener's Choice Awards at the An Post Irish Book Awards last night. And well deserved. And congratulations to Vicky. And we're trying to get hold of her so we can say congratulations to her on air. So we'll do that before the end of the programme. And thanks to everybody who voted for Vicky's book, Overcoming. We decided that we would champion it on the programme today. Not that that made the slightest bit of difference. She would have won on her own. So well deserved. Now, they were talking about the RTÉ Guide with Gay Byrne on the front, and it appears to me that people are hoovering up Gay Byrne memorabilia. And that's lovely. And it's a testimony to the affection that's out there for the man who we'll all miss. We've been getting an email, and sorry we didn't get back to you. Sandra has been on to me twice to the personal email. And she says, Ray, not sure if your team can find out or know, but can you tell me where I can buy or view Once Again With Meaning by Gay Byrne, or when you might repeat it on the TV? Thanks, Sandra. So there was a time when, Sandra, you could buy a copy of a programme from the RTE archives, but it appears they don't do that anymore. So we put a call in to Roger Childs, who's the head of religious programming in RTE, and he was the man responsible for The Meaning of Life. And I think Once Again With Meaning was the compilation of the best of The Meanings of Life, which Gay did over the years. And we've put a call in to him, and he hasn't got back to us yet. He's a busy man, so we will let you know. I would imagine it's the type of thing they will reschedule, maybe over the Christmas period, but I don't know. But we will give you a definitive on that. And thanks for your email to ray@rte.ie. While we're on emails and texts, my mum never asked me to do anything on the show until now. We were talking about charity calendars the other day. And when I got up to the office and got to my phone, there was a text from my mum. She says, could you give a mention to Dementia Society Memory Ribbon Day in Aldi stores on Thursday? So that's happening today. See, she thought I was on yesterday and I wasn't. So Memory Ribbon, you can purchase them in Aldi stores today, and they're for the Dementia Society. So happy to do that, Matt, if you are listening. And be careful what you wish for, because we were talking about charity calendars the other day and we got loads of mentions of various things around the country. Just to clarify, I mentioned that one calendar was an Aer Lingus calendar. It was actually a Dublin airport calendar. That's the one that features Muhammad Ali and Nelson Mandela and Katie Taylor and all those people. And that's a Dublin airport calendar and not an Aer Lingus calendar, and it's for charity. And there was another Volkswagen one that's for Temple Street, and we were talking about Heart Children. Anyway, on foot of that, on the back of that, we got a phone call from Siobhan, and we're going to be talking to Siobhan very shortly, because she's put together a calendar. Well, I won't give too much away, but we're going to be talking to her about it and who she convinced to do things that they wouldn't normally do and all that. And there's rugby balls involved, and there's papers involved, and there's ducks involved. More about that and on. Last week we were talking to Anne. And Anne was the lady who came into the TV show, and she brought with her some chutney, some jams, some brown bread and an apple tart. She also wrote me a lovely letter. And in the letter, she was asking me to ask you to write letters to your children, or vice versa, to your parents, because she felt that the art of letter writing was a dying art form. And she came in and she talked to us about that, among other things, and she's going to be coming back into us. And we got a letter then, well, a card from Father Kevin. I'm just going to look at that's Lyon. Kevin Lyon. I said, heard you talk about the value of a letter on the radio, 12th of whatever. I'm enclosing this piece from a Patricia Sanchez. It's from a publication called Celebration, based in the US. The publication is no longer in existence and the author has retired, but I think it's beautifully worded, and I now use it to encourage letter writing as a sticky. So he's got it done up as a sticky, and he must stick it on the back of letters when he writes it. And it's a quote from Patricia Sanchez, and it reads as follows. The value of a letter in these days of email, texting, Twitter and Facebook, personal letters have become a rare but precious commodity. To receive a letter is to know that someone has taken time to share with you their thoughts, experience, hopes and plans. At times, such personal letters can actually be a portal to the soul. Patricia Sanchez via Father Kevin Lyon. And thanks so much for that, Kevin. And I hope you're well down in Blessington in County Wicklow. What else is in there today? They're talking about decaffeinated coffee. I'm a drinker of decaffeinated coffee. Now, I was working last night, so I had an espresso at lunchtime. That's why I'm sounding very chirpy. But normally, I would have decaffeinated coffee. And I find that I sleep a lot better. The mood is a lot more even. I don't have, you know, peaks and troughs. It's all even across the day. But they're now saying that more and more people are drinking decaffeinated coffee. And the standard of decaffeinated coffee has gone up. We're a nation of coffee drinkers. 75% of Irish people drink coffee. 7 in 10 drink more than one cup a day. And in the Daily Mail today, they say by switching to decaf, you can improve your sleep and cut down on your caffeine. And they're telling you how to make decaffeinated coffee there. I wonder if many people done it. Have many people switched from caffeinated to decaffeinated? I think it's just the hot beverage. That's what does it for me. Which brings us nicely on to Kate Mulvey writing in The Guardian or The Telegraph today. It's The Telegraph. And she's talking about the sober alcoholic this Christmas. Now, the thing about it is there are a lot of people out there who aren't alcoholics who've decided that they're not going to drink. And just because you're not, just because you don't have a problem with drink doesn't mean you're not, I better get this right now because I should have it on T-shirt. Just because you're not a problem drinker doesn't mean you don't have a problem with drink. That's the thing. That's the thing that a lot of these writers who are writing on sobriety now say. And of course, Christmas is a challenging time if you don't drink because everything, of course, moves and is centred around a drink. So there's advice from Kate Mulvey today. Don't panic when you enter a party without any Dutch courage. You arrive at the party and look around. Everyone is in conversation, laughing and drinking. Take a deep breath. No one knows you're sober. Smile and go with the flow. And then she's saying you can concoct all sorts of drinks that look like alcoholic drinks. Well, there's loads of non-alcoholic beers out there that you can have or non-alcoholic gins. So then people won't be pushing drink on you. And she says, fake it till you make it. Merriment can be faked. So get involved in the conga line. Crack the jokes, dance the dance, and before you know it, you'll be enjoying yourself. And know when to leave. I was talking to somebody about this last night. That's the important thing, knowing when to leave. Knowing when to leave. So if you're out with people drinking, when you hear the same story for the third time, that's usually a good cue to say, good night, see you, bye, bye, good luck, good luck. I always find it's a good thing to say you're going to the loo and just never come back. There's information in the paper today. This is the last one I get on 20-year-olds. They're doing this longitudinal study in Trinity College. So they've been following these 5,000 people over the years from age 9. Now they're 20. So what do these 20-year-olds look like in 2019 in Ireland? Well, most of them still live with their parents. That's no surprise. They're preoccupied with the housing crisis. Politicians take note. 1 in 4, and this is shocking, disturbing, is showing signs of depression. Most of them are registered to vote. Over half of them have been engaged in some form of political activism over the past year or so. A lot of them drink alcohol. A quarter of them smoke cannabis. And more than a third are overweight or obese. So that's what 20-year-olds in Ireland look like today. So what does that say? You would expect that to be living at home, wouldn't you? You would expect that if you're 20. The obesity thing is worrying. The depression thing is also worrying. Is there any connection? I don't know. It's encouraging to see that they're involved in political activism. And it's encouraging to see that they're preoccupied with the housing crisis because they might use their political activism and their vote to get things changed when we're called to vote in the next general election. So that's that. It's a snapshot of 20-year-olds today. If you're a fan of Joker, I see that they're already planning a sequel to Joker. It's reportedly in the works after the first movie from director Todd Phillips proved to be a critical and box office success. So Joker 2. The first one recently crossed the $1 billion mark at the worldwide box office, making it the highest grossing R-rated movie ever and the most profitable comic book movie of all time. Speaking of movies, we're going to be talking to Ciara O'Brien about streaming. You might have noticed that there's Apple Plus, Disney Plus is on the way. Of course, Netflix has been there for years. There's Amazon Prime. What do you stream, if you stream at all? And what's the future for all of that? And where do stations like Virgin One Media and RTE fit into the future of TV viewing? And we'll be putting all those questions to Ciara O'Brien, which she drops into us. If you have any questions for us, for her, 51551 ray@rte.ie. Now, the choice outside to Maeve and Dave and Nikki. We have three Irish sort of 90s hits. You can choose which one. Is it this one? That'd be the stunning, Brewing Up a Storm. Or this one? Mary. She's got a new job. She's working in the bank. That's the four of us. Or this one? Take a parachute and jump. Will it be the stunning, the four of us, or something happens? It's one, it's one, it's three. One gets it. Good afternoon. 515 on RadarG.E. Stunning. Brewing Up a Storm. That's chosen by Maeve and Nikki today. 515 RadarG.E. A yawn is a silent scream for coffee, Ray. But if you don't have coffee, you won't yawn. That's what happens. And then people have withdrawal symptoms, don't they? That's because you have to feel normal in the morning. And unless you have your coffee in the morning, you get a headache. So you take the coffee and the whole cycle starts again. Having moved house during the summer, my 11-year-old daughter and her friends write back and forth to each other. I currently have four letters for posting in my bag from my daughter to her friends. Isn't that great? And Grania has been on. It could be Grania. G-R-A-N-I-A. Sitting at my kitchen table, handwriting loads of letters to put in my Christmas cards, all different as they go to different people. One couple I've been writing to for 50 years. I love writing letters and love, in capitals, getting a handwritten reply. I know Father Lyon, an amazingly talented and lovely man. All the best from Grania Grania in Ballymore, Eustace. And Seamus in Killarney. Afternoon, Seamus. He says, Ray, socially, going to the toilet and not coming back is known as the Irish exit. Well, I've perfected the Irish exit over the years. Now I've perfected the Irish staying at home, so you don't have to exit. But that'll change. That'll change. Just going through a phase of my life. Two young children. I'll come out the other side and I'll be party boy. Maybe not. Next Wednesday on the show, Owen Colfer is coming in to talk about his new book, The Fowl Twins, which is a spin-off of his Artemis Fowl series. The Fowl Twins are Artemis's younger twin brothers, and they get up to all sorts of things, as you would expect. Now, we know for a fact that there are loads of Owen Colfer and Artemis Fowl fans out there. So we'd like you to get in touch so that we have questions from you for Owen when he's here. So you can email any questions or comments about the Artemis Fowl or the Fowl Twins or Owen Colfer to ray@rte.ie. Or thanks to the magic of modern technology, you can record yourself. Yes, record a voice note on WhatsApp and send it to us on our WhatsApp number 087 187 9101. 087 187 9101. It's mad that we are a national broadcaster and we had to buy a mobile phone. It's actually a physical phone. Yeah, I know. Who would have thought? There's actually a physical phone that we have for Radio 1 that gets the WhatsApp. That's mad. So all of these huge technological advancements, and then we're going back to one phone with an 087 number to get your voice notes on. But it's exciting in a way. It's exciting. So if you have something to say to Owen Colfer and you want to say it to him as opposed to write it to him, record a voice note and send it off to 087 187 9101 and Owen will be with us next Wednesday, and we're really looking forward to that.
The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Or 51551 and Anne in Cannes. Good afternoon, Anne. Haven't heard from you in a long time. Ray, you must never pretend you're going to the toilet and not return. A guy did that to me in the US many years ago and left me with a large bill. Tut, tut. Well, Anne, I would never do that. I would always make sure I bought around before I left. Sheila says, I find the demise of letter writing very sad. I have two very precious letters. The last one my late mother sent me, and similar one from a close friend. That's Sheila. Now, earlier in the week, we were talking about charity calendars, and there is a load of them out there at the moment. And this morning, we got a phone call from Siobhan Hurley from Newbridge in County Kildare, and Siobhan is on the line. Good afternoon, Siobhan.
Hi, Ray. How are you?
Good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you.
So you have put together a charity calendar called Calendar Boys.
We did.
Yes.
We did indeed.
And you're raising funds for?
The Newbridge Cancer Support Group is here in Newbridge. It's just a local group, and they do some wonderful things for people going through cancer, getting over cancer, you know, needing a little bit of support here and there. So we just felt, I said earlier on, I have gone through my, I had breast cancer for the last year and a half thereabouts. So I've come out the other side, thank goodness. And so I just wanted to do something.
And it hit you just when you'd retired?
Hit us just when I retired, yeah. We had retired in March 2018. And in June, I got diagnosed with breast cancer. And so it was a bit of a roller coaster for a period of time. Wasn't what we were planning.
Yeah.
Anyway, we've been there. We've got through it. And
you're at the other side. And when you say we...
friends and what,
when you say we...
When I talk about my husband, I did talk about him because he's been with Donald, has been there the whole way through it,
right,
with
yeah.
me. And we were in the business together as well. So it was, we both retired together. So... we were planning to do loads of things, which we will start to do now, hopefully.
Yeah, you're very much a we, which is nice.
Yeah. I suppose.
Okay.
Well, I suppose when you're with this fella for 40 years, you know, and it's a long way, it's a long time, and everything is we.
Yeah. Okay, Calendar Boys, the calendar.
Yes.
What will people see if they buy the calendar?
Oh, beautiful men! Absolute beautiful men. Real men, that's
right,
what I say,
okay.
Real men.
And where did you recruit these real men?
I recruited them, really, in fairness. It was at, in O'Rourke, our local pub here in Newbridge, and it was over a few drinks on a Friday night, and just something came into my head, and when the lads had a few drinks in them, I said to them, what would they think about doing Calendar Boys, because... there's loads of calendar girls.
Yeah.
We said, sure, what about calendar boys? And they all, well, at least six or seven of them said, yeah, okay, grand. And a few weeks later, when I was trying to get a date to do the photography, so a few of them starting to pull out and going, oh, thought that was a joke. But they came up trumps. They all rallied, and 12 of them turned up in a Rourke's bar at 8 o'clock one morning. On the Saturday morning to get our photos taken.
In the nude?
For this calendar. In the nude. Well, with our props.
With their props, their, right.
Yes.
So who chose the props?
The lads chose the props.
Right.
And they came with their props.
And it was to protect their modesty?
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay.
They had to protect that.
I'm looking at Tony here.
Yeah, what a sight.
What a sight.
Yeah, Mr. May.
He has a rugby ball strategically positioned.
Yes.
Yeah.
He's an absolute avid fan of rugby, so that was his idea of bringing the rugby ball for his prop.
Did you ever think you'd see your husband positioned on a chaise lounge with a rugby ball protecting his modesty?
Absolutely not.
No. He doesn't
Absolutely
look comfortable,
not.
Siobhan.
He does or doesn't?
He doesn't.
No, he doesn't, actually.
No.
He doesn't look comfortable. He looks a bit nervous.
Yeah.
And he was one of the first to go and get his photo taken. So I suppose he started it all. So the rest of the lads just rallied after
had
him.
Had to follow suit. You had to follow suit.
They followed suit, yeah.
It's for a great cause, Newbridge Cancer Support. And you managed to get... John Downing from the Irish Independent to do it. Good afternoon, John.
Hello, Ray. How are you?
Now, people will be used to hearing your voice on Sean O'Rourke and Drive Time and that. They probably are less used to, or probably will be shocked to see you, naked on a chaise lounge reading the Irish Independent.
Well, there's probably a very good reason why I feature more frequently on the wireless than anywhere, and in newsprint than anything else, you know. And I think you have one good reason in front of you there, Ray.
No, you look well. You look well, John. Yeah, as people can imagine, you're holding the Irish Independent up there. And
yeah, well, I mean, I didn't have a wild about a choice there, did I? That prop chose itself.
Yeah, yeah.
Though it's probably news to the management of the Irish Independent that they're thus featured.
It's a good ad for them. It's a good ad for them. So were you one of those people who had a few pints on a Friday night and thought it was a joke?
Yeah, absolutely. I was positive it was a joke for weeks on end, and I was just playing along with the joke. We'll be in the calendar. What a calendar that'll be, etc. You know.
Yeah.
And then Siobhan, exactly as you said, she announced a date, and I said, "What? It's not a joke." So we all by then I say, and most of the boys say, "Look, I didn't think about it at all, and I'm still not thinking about it. I'm just going through. It's done. It's done. It's done." You know.
Have you got any feedback?
Slowly. Between you and me, he says to the Irish nation listening to the wireless, I haven't been promulgating this one, but I think I fear it'll take its course from here.
Yeah, right, okay. So your colleagues in the Irish Independent probably didn't know about it? Would that be fair enough?
There probably is a very rich seam coming their way, I think.
Yes, of slagging, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Was there Photoshop to you? Was it Photoshopped in any way?
He certainly, I don't believe, Tom Cash, by the way, was the photographer.
Yes.
And all tribute to him, because he had, in my case particularly, he had plenty of quantity to work with, but the quality was a scale LR fod. It was hard to get in there, Ray, but all the fake tan, trying not to trip over, slip on the old fake tan and body oil in Grecian 2000, not to mention tripping over the wigs and the specs and the dentures. But we got through it, and mainly with the help of Tom Cash, because I think he did very fine work, given the material he had to work with.
Well, no, but it's a very brave thing to do. And I don't mean brave in that, because some people use the word brave and they really mean stupid. I mean, no, this is a brave thing to do.
Yeah, I don't know.
I think it was, and particularly because, you know, to get serious for a moment, because the night before you went for the photograph, you lost a very good friend to cancer.
I did, yeah. And I think, you see, at this stage, you know, very few Irish adults have been left untouched by the scourge that is cancer. And I suppose when you're asked to do something, you know, you make the best of it and get on with it.
Mm.
Yes, the previous night I was with the best and oldest friend I had, a man called Brian Mulcahy in Limerick. And as luck would have it, he died that night and I was close by. I'm grateful to his family for giving me that privilege and my sympathies and thoughts again with them.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, without being mawkish or melodramatic, there was a certain symmetry to that, yes.
And did you share with him what you were doing the next morning?
Or? No, I couldn't really. No. There was so much going on.
Yes,
no,
of course, of course, of course, of course. But I'm sure he was in your thoughts, and
yes,
and still is in your thoughts. Obviously,
foremost in my thoughts.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's there's great fun in it. That's the thing. And
well,
nobody is taking it quite seriously. And
well, we had a ball night. The night of the launch in O'Rourke's pub in Newbridge, one of the best nights out we had in years.
Oh, great, great. Siobhan, congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you, Ray.
There'll be people ringing up now from...
Without the boys, I couldn't have done it. So,
yeah.
I mean, thanks to all the lads and everybody that helps with the calendar and print and everything. It was fantastic. It's lots...
And it's available in, I'd imagine, outlets throughout Newbridge.
It's available in Farrell's and it's available in O'Rourke's. It's available in Royston. Different places around Newbridge.
Do you know
and
we should...
We'll be in the cottage market, or the market in Newbridge now for the Saturday in December as well.
Great. I was just thinking there, we should probably start a thing on the show, the Irish Charity Calendar Awards. You know,
yes, I think you should.
Yeah, because there's so many around, and just to give them a shop window to show off their wares, it might be a good idea.
Well, there's 12 lovely men here to show off on this calendar. So.
There you go.
As I think one of them, actually, you were in school with, if you maybe noticed,
I probably don't recognise him with his clothes off.
It must be Fintan Barrett.
Oh, yeah, Fintan Barrett. Yes. Say hello to him when you see him next. Yeah, Fintan Barrett.
Of course.
Yeah, yeah. He was a good bit older than me, of course. John, good talking to you.
Thanks, Ray.
Congratulations on the shoot. And Siobhan, congratulations on the calendar.
Thanks a million. Thank you very much, Ray. Thank you. Appreciate that. Okay, bye-bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, to stream or not to stream, that is the question. As the battle for viewers is set to intensify, I'm joined by Ciara O'Brien from the Irish Times to guide us through the world of TV streaming services.
And there are a lot.
Yes, so we're talking, I suppose, the one that people will know best is Netflix.
Yeah, I mean, Netflix is the original. I mean, there's so much stuff on Netflix, and it's gotten better over the years, because when it launched first, the first thing people were saying was, you know, there's all this old kind of old TV shows, old programs. You weren't getting like the greatest films, you know, as they left the cinema, they weren't going onto Netflix. But now Netflix has a lot of its own content, and it's invested billions in this. So now you have Orange is the New Black, and you've got House of Cards.
I mean, yes.
And they've also done deals. It's not just their own content. I mean, they've also done deals they did deals to have Breaking Bad.
Yes. Line of Duty. Series,
yeah, and The Good Place, which is a personal favourite of mine. So as they air in the States, or as they aired in the case of some of them that have gone off the air now, they were going onto Netflix. So it was a way of getting them without having to do anything illegal or copyright infringing.
Okay. So streaming services, you go on, you download an app, and you pay a monthly subscription.
You do.
Netflix costs what?
From €8, depending on what you want. I mean, obviously,
€8 a month.
Yeah, €8 is the standard one, and you can watch it on, I think it's one device at a time. And if you want more, you pay more.
So it's €96 a year.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, people are saying that there's loads more streaming services coming down the tracks, and some of them have arrived already. And Netflix's monopoly is going to be eroded.
Yeah.
So. Recently, for example, Apple Plus arrived on the scene.
Yeah, Apple TV Plus is great, because if you bought a new iPhone or any new Apple device in the last couple of months, you will get a year's subscription to Apple TV Plus included. Now, it's great for two reasons. First of all, you're not paying for it, really. You've already kind of spent the money on your new device. But from Apple's point of view, that means they have a year to kind of impress you with this, to the point where you're not going to want to give it up. I mean, they did the same thing with the music service. You know, everybody got 3 months free. And by the time you got to the end of the 3 months, you're kind of, you know, you have your playlist built. You don't really want to move away from it. Okay. So they launched...
But not a lot of people are going to be buying a new Apple device. Maybe for Christmas.
iPhones,
yes, yeah.
iPads, okay. Anything like that. If you're buying a new Mac, you get it with it.
And their big thing is this new program with Jennifer Aniston and Reese Witherspoon, produced by Reese Witherspoon, which is called...
It's The Morning Show.
I'm
addicted to that, by the way.
You're addicted to that, right.
And what they did was they put the first three episodes of all their new series on launch day, and then I think it was November 1st, and then they release one a week then after that. So you've got The Morning Show, you've got C, which is Jason Momoa. It's a post-apocalyptic thing that actually I kind of like as well. And there's something called From Mankind, which was if the space race had gone differently and the Russians had landed first.
What would have happened? Yes.
And then there's a load of kids' TV shows. My five-year-old loves, there's a thing called The Helpsters, I think it is. It's made by the same people who do Sesame Street.
Okay. So for people who don't get it free, how much does that cost a month?
€5 a month. Which is significantly cheaper.
€60 a year.
Yeah, and then if you have...
Amazon Prime, let's go through them quickly. Amazon Prime,
Amazon Prime.
Much is that?
That's €3 for the first 6 months, and then €6 a month after that.
Okay, and
for the video.
So it would have the Top Gear lads, for example.
Yeah, stuff like The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, The Man in the High Castle. I mean, I actually had Amazon Prime Video for a few months before I actually started watching it, because I got a Prime subscription for deliveries from Amazon, and it comes with that.
And they all give you something, and I suppose to get you hooked, they need to have something that everybody's talking about.
Yeah, they all have their own exclusives.
Yes.
The person who's going to win is the company that manages to persuade all of these people to give them elements of that and bundle it all into one subscription for one price, and you get it on one place, and then that's
it. Is that going to happen?
I don't know. I mean, look, that's crystal ball stuff.
Okay.
It may not.
And the big one that's coming down the tracks next March is Disney streaming service.
Disney Plus. That launched recently in the US. I actually have it because I have access to a US billing.
Is that legal?
It is. Okay. It's all above board. I have to use a VPN to watch it. VPNs are legal.
What are VPNs?
VPN, it's basically like a tunnel through the internet. It's a virtual private network. So I use it for different things. Like say, I use it to stop advertisers tracking my internet activity so they can't serve ads to me. I use it if I'm in a public Wi-Fi hotspot because it's more secure.
Okay.
But you can also use it to make it seem like you're in a different place.
So you can virtually be in America?
Yes. So I can say that I'm in America or in the UK if I want to access iPlayer online, the BBC iPlayer online. Or if I'm away,
how do you purchase VPN then?
VPNs, there's a few of them. The one I use is ExpressVPN. There's NordVPN and a few others. And you just basically go to their website. You usually sign up for. They usually have a month's trial, so you can, or a 7-day trial, so you can decide if it fits your needs and if it's easy enough to use. And say for if I'm using it on my phone, there's an app I download it onto my phone. I sign in with my login details, and then
does it cost you money?
It costs me. I think it costs me about $70 for the year.
Okay.
Yeah, which is worth it for me.
But it's all adding up here.
It is.
Now, Disney, people think of Disney as children's, but mm-hmm. Disney, the conglomerate, own a lot of stuff, don't they?
They have a lot of stuff on there. They have content from their own content, obviously Disney, which includes Star Wars. They've got Pixar, they've got Marvel. They have National Geographic content on Disney right. Plus.
And would they be taking all of their stuff off all the other streaming services?
I'm not 100% sure if they're taking everything, but look, they're going to want all the best stuff. So that they're going to want to have all of the best content in on their service.
Right.
I mean, because I can still access some Disney stuff on other streaming services, like stuff like Now TV. And you know,
how much will Apple be?
Disney or
Disney.
It's $7 in the US at the month. At the moment, that's $7 a month. I don't know the exact.
Okay,
Irish
so that's around
yet,
80.
So we'll have to wait another
probably
few months
80 euro. Yeah. Okay. So you mentioned it there. The last one, then Now TV,
yes.
which gets a lot of advertising on TV.
Yeah.
What exactly is not? Is it a streaming service?
It gives you access to Sky channels. So
right.
I signed my parents up for it. So that you get a stick. That fits into your TV.
Yes, like a USB stick.
You don't have to have it. You can use it through the app on your phone as well. But what it is connects directly to your TV and it basically turns your TV into a bit of a smart TV. So you sign up for passes then. You can sign up for an entertainment pass, which will cover a few channels.
Right. Their big selling point is no contract.
No contract, yeah. So if you decide that you want to watch, say over Christmas, you want to get Sky Movies, Sky Cinema, you can get that for a month on a Now TV pass. Or if you want, say there's some sports events coming up, you like football, but you don't want to have to go to the pub to watch it and you don't want to get yourself into a contract paying a large amount of money every
yes.
month for a sports thing, you're probably not going to watch too often because you're not home. This is what happened in our house.
Right.
So what you do is you can sign up for a monthly pass, a weekly pass or a daily pass.
Let's do the maths on all of this.
Mm-hmm.
So you yourself are signed up to most of these.
Yes.
How much are you paying a year then?
I actually don't know. I'm going to be honest because I like streaming services. So
okay.
I'm signed up for a lot of them. I'm pretty sure you're going to shock me by telling me, but
yeah.
Anyway.
Well, I think it's if you're paying your TV license, which I assume you are.
I am, yes.
100, 150 is 250 and 60 is 310 and 160 is 470 a year.
Yep, and then on top of that, you probably have
and
the
then,
TV subscription.
What?
The TV subscription that I still pay as well.
Oh, yes.
Mm. So
you're over 500 euro a year.
Yep, but I have two small children and that is worth paying.
Now, here's the thing. I imagine come January, when people are getting advice on losing weight and changing their diet, they'll also get advice on their finances.
Mm-hmm.
And I think next year, we're going to get a lot of advice on cutting back on our subscriptions. Something has to go.
Something will have to go. But I think actually one point to make is that one of the things that probably can't go is the TV license fee. Because if you have a TV in your house, obviously you have to pay it.
Yes.
So if you have anything that's, you know, even if you don't actually use the TV to access broadcast, you still have to pay it. So that's, you know, unless you're going to look at all your TV shows on a computer.
A phone.
Or a phone, yeah.
Yes.
You're going to have to just stump that up.
Now, we don't have much time, but you've thought about this.
Mm-hmm.
So where does RTE and Virgin Media One and ITV and BBC, where do they all fit into the future of apps, streaming and all that?
Well, I mean, all these channels obviously are available. They all have their own catch-up apps and you can watch live. I think what's going to be the challenge is getting young people because I still have TV packages. My parents still have TV packages. The area where it's really going to be a challenge is people who are kind of like 16 to 25 because they're the ones who are dropping off watching linear terrestrial TV at a rate of knots, and it's going faster than people originally thought it would.
And is Netflix still king of streaming for the moment?
For the moment, yes.
Okay.
For the moment, but these things change quite quickly, so we'll see.
They're sort of nipping at Netflix's heels. Ciara, thanks so much for doing that. Thank you very much. And you can read Ciara's article in the Irish Times today, 515 on RaidRTE.ie.
The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Information out to.
Yeah, that's Mark Shaw you're hearing in the background there. And Mark Shaw is an author and he's written 20 books or so. The one that I'm fascinated by is The Reporter That Knew Too Much, The Dorothy Kilgallen Story. And Mark is in town for the Festival of Politics. And you're in the Taylor's Hall in Dublin tomorrow night at 7:30. And tickets are still available for $7.99. You're in conversation with Sarah Carey. You're very welcome.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, sir.
Thanks so much for coming in. So Dorothy Kilgallen, I have to admit, before watching one of your talks, I was blissfully unaware of her existence. Who was she? What did she do?
Well, that's what they'll hear tomorrow night. I never knew about Dorothy at all. There was a famous television show called What's My Line? They guess people's unusual occupations, and Dorothy was a panelist on there. She's a remarkable story because she was a college dropout. She had that television show. She overcame all of the gender issues of the time and became the most famous journalist in the United States. She was syndicated to a number of newspapers, 200 across the country. She covered all the big trials at the time, all of that kind of thing. But I never knew about her being the most credible reporter about the JFK assassination.
Yeah, she had it all because she was a credible journalist, as you say, and we're going to talk more about that. She was a TV personality. She looked great. She was friends with all the stars. She like you compared her to Oprah Winfrey.
Yeah, and, unfortunately, when she died at an early age of 52 in 1965, she was erased from the face of the earth. Nobody ever heard of her again.
Okay.
And that was unfortunate because, she became what the New York Post called the most powerful female voice in America. You got to think about that. I mean, that's a big deal.
So she had a weekly column.
Yeah, daily column.
A daily column, sorry. And she started writing about the Jack Ruby trial. Now, Jack Ruby had killed Lee Harvey Oswald, who had killed John F. Kennedy.
Well, we would have to debate that.
Okay, right. Okay. Well, that's what we think, and that's what we were sold. That's the story we were sold. You don't believe that?
Well, no, I don't. And I'm blessed to probably know more about the assassinations than anybody because of Dorothy.
Yes.
She had an 18-month investigation. JFK was a very good friend of hers. Dorothy had ties to Ireland, her family coming from County Mayo. She was a great reporter and a woman of integrity, and she looked into the assassinations. And right away, 6 days after the assassination, she started writing these scathing columns. Oswald file must not close. This doesn't make sense about Ruby could go into a basement and kill this guy. I mean, she was going the wrong way on a one-way street when everybody else was looking at Oswald alone. And that's where I picked up on my research through Dorothy.
And she sat in on Jack Ruby's trial.
The reason she's different than every other author or expert, including me, who's written about the assassinations, I've written 4 books, is she was there.
Yes.
She was at the Jack Ruby trial. She's the only reporter to have interviewed him. She exposed his testimony before that crazy Warren Commission, before it was supposed to be published. So she really was on the track to the truth, was going to publish it in a book for Random House in 1965 when she died.
Okay, so from the outside, looking in, and you've written all those books about it, Jack Ruby, his assassination of Lee Harvey Oswald was random enough.
Well, it was supposed to be.
Yes.
But I uncovered what is right here, the most important historical documents about the JFK assassination ever, the Ruby trial transcripts. A gentleman who had read The Reporter Who Knew Too Much got in touch with me and said, I'm going to give them to you. 2,000 pages I went through. And they were amazing in terms of what I found. For instance, Ruby always said he got into the basement to kill Oswald by accident. Well, right here's the proof in the transcripts. He said he would be there when Oswald was going to be transferred.
Pretending to be a journalist.
Exactly, pretending to be a journalist.
What did he do? What was his profession or what was it?
Well, he's a nightclub owner, but he was very much close to the mafia the mafioso in Dallas, which connected then to New Orleans. And he was kind of a mafia wannabe.
Okay.
And basically, he was brought in my opinion, and through the evidence, to silence Lee Harvey Oswald because he was a loose end having to do with those who plotted and killed the President of the United States.
Okay.
No question about it.
So if Ruby was hired to silence Lee Harvey Oswald. What about Ruby?
Well, there was a lawyer named Melvin Belli that many people in your audience may remember. I practiced law with him in the 80s in San Francisco. Belli represented Jack Ruby. And I was able to find out that basically what they did is bring... You have the man who had the most motive to kill JFK was Carlos Marcello, who was a mafia don in New Orleans. He hated Bobby Kennedy. And I look at the assassinations different than anybody else. I look at them why Bobby Kennedy wasn't killed instead of why JFK was. And that makes it all different. Because when Bobby Kennedy, or when Jack Kennedy was killed, Bobby Kennedy became powerless. All right? Mm. So then you look at Jack Ruby and you look at Lee Harvey Oswald being one of those people who was involved in JFK's death. Now he gets arrested. Now you bring in Ruby to shoot him and kill him, tie up that loose end. Then you bring in Melvin Belli, the lawyer, to silence Ruby at trial, and that's exactly what happened as well. It's a very common sense situation.
And then Dorothy Kilgallen comes along, and she is following a lead that nobody else is following.
Exactly.
And she is commissioned to write a book
exactly
about Jack Ruby, Lee Harvey Oswald, and the assassination of JFK. And people fear that she's getting too close to the truth.
She made all kinds of enemies.
This is your theory.
No. I don't speculate on
okay,
my books.
This is primary sources, okay.
I promise you. But Dorothy was just about to publish that book. They found her dead in her townhouse in New York City in a bedroom she never slept in, wearing her false eyelashes, her hairpiece, and her makeup, wearing clothes she never wore to bed. They came in after she died and looked and saw an empty bottle of Seconal and decided right away that she had an overdose of barbiturates combined with alcohol. The medical examiner's office made no sense. Their report, when I got a copy of the autopsy, which is in the book, and we found out there were three barbiturates in her system, not one. It wasn't suicide. It wasn't accidental. She was murdered because she was the reporter who knew too much.
And they were in powder form.
Good. You've done your research.
Yes. And why would she take it in powder form?
Absolutely. And that really, you know, really cracked the case open for me and for those people, forensic people who've looked at this said there's no way she would have accidentally taken it.
So who benefited then from the death of Dorothy Kilgallen?
If she would have exposed Carlos Marcello, J. Edgar Hoover for covering up
the head of the FBI at the time,
FBI, and those people that were involved, there would have been a grand jury investigation.
Okay.
Hoover would have been indicted, so would Marcello, all those people. Dorothy made enemies, and those enemies were responsible for her death.
Okay, there was a chink of light at the beginning of last year where the New York DA said they were going to reopen the case.
Yes.
Yeah.
I was able, after 50 years, to get them to reopen the case. I was on, you know, fire. I thought, this is great. My wife and I went to New York, met with the investigator. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. Thorough investigation. Everything went well. I gave them all this evidence about the main suspect who's still around today. And all at once, then I got a phone call and said, you know what? We're going to terminate this investigation. We just don't think there's anything there. And I'll never forget what the AD said. And you know what? We just can't find any harm to her, but we don't know who did it, which is completely contradictory.
Yes.
Made me want to throw up.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm still after getting justice for Dorothy. That's what my claim is.
Yeah, and I feel that you are energized by horror, and you actually truly believe that she is guiding you in your research.
Some people will think I'm probably crazy, but I'll tell you what, I'm here today because somehow or another she's guided me along. Ever since I found out about Dorothy, she's kind of been the guiding light. I think she chose me to write her story, bring her back to life in some ways. The book became a bestseller. They're going to make a film. I mean, Dorothy, her remarkable career has come back, and I'm proud of that. It's kind of my contribution to history through Dorothy.
So more and more people will be hearing about Dorothy Kilgallen in the next 18 months or so.
Well, yes, and I think Ireland needs to adopt her.
Yeah.
I mean, she was a remarkable woman, as I say. Hemingway called her the greatest female writer in the world, but I'll bet there's very few people in Ireland who have ever heard of her.
Very few.
And we're going to do something about that if I have anything to do with it.
Do you fear for your life?
Well, we're in the same business. You get on the air and you start talking about the truth, it can cause you some problems. Yes, I've had some hacking of email in my... and my Facebook page and things like that. But that's part of the business, you know that.
Mm.
And for the most part, this woman has been revered by people around the world and people have been very thankful. So far, so good. Once in a while, I used to start the car and kind of wonder, but so far, I'm still here.
There's an anniversary around now, isn't there?
Oh, tomorrow is the 56th anniversary of JFK's death. You know, Dorothy died at 52. He died at an early age. It was a senseless death. They wanted to kill Bobby Kennedy. So it's two tragedies because they had their whole lives ahead of them. And I do want to say, you know, a woman of Irish descent absolutely has proven that there was a plot to kill the president of Irish descent. Now, there's something going on there. That can't be by happenstance.
I want to talk to you more. You'll have to come in again when you're in Ireland again, because you're such a fascinating man, and we only touched on one of your pet subjects, and you have many.
Yes, I do.
Mark Shaw is in conversation with Sarah Carey tomorrow in Taylor's Hall in Dublin at 7:30. Tickets are still available, and you can find out more at festivalofpolitics.ie. Mark, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Now, Alison Keating and Ray O'Neill will be here in about 10 minutes' time. Alison is a psychologist and Ray is a psychotherapist, and they come in regularly to give you advice on relationship woes. So if you have any questions for them, get them into us now. ray@rte.ie. That's ray@rte.ie or 51551 if it's a shorter correspondence. Now, on the line, we have Vicky Phelan. Good afternoon, Vicky.
Hi, Ray. How are you?
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. I'm still smiling like a Cheshire cat today.
So, winner, your book, Overcoming, won the RTE Radio 1 Listener's Choice Award in the Unpost Irish Book Awards last night. There's a mouthful for you.
It's a mouthful, isn't it?
Yeah. Had you any inkling?
No, I mean, I was just delighted to be shortlisted. And, you know, the fact that I was in two categories, I thought I'd just get one, but I got two, which was brilliant. But, you know, for me, Ray, that was the one I really wanted. I wanted the Listener's Choice Awards because I knew it was the one that was voted for by the public. So for me to get that one rather than the other one means more to me, to be honest. And also because it came from your show, you know, you were the very first person who spoke to me on the radio ever before all of the stuff happened last year. So I think it's very fitting, to be honest.
Yeah, well, it was an easy choice for us, I have to say. What was it like last night? Very glamorous, was it?
It was, yeah, very glamorous. I mean, you men, you find it's very easy for you to just wear a tux, pair of shoes, shave in the shower, and you're out the door. The women have to go through so much hassle to get in. And the problem then is the bloody shoes and the wind and the hair. So, yeah, that I had a big hood up, even though it wasn't raining last night going across the bridge because I was afraid my hair would move.
yeah, protect the hair.
Absolutely.
And you know, the great and the good of Irish writing and literature were there. Who did you bump into?
I bumped into loads of people. I was talking to Emer and Sarah, obviously the two Ashling girls. I've met them a few times now. Sure, they're mad as hatters, but they're lovely. So I was talking to them. I was talking to Miriam, obviously, for a while. She did a great job last night presenting the awards. And I met Sinead Gleeson. She won for her book, Constellations. Yes. She's lovely. Hadn't met her before, so it was actually lovely to meet her. And Sinead Moriarty, who I've met a few times, and we've hit it off. You know, she was nominated but didn't win last night. Mm. And who was Fintan O'Toole? I'd never met Fintan before. Always, obviously, read his column. But yeah. Never met him. It's funny, isn't it, when you meet people in person?
And I suppose people like Fintan O'Toole would be delighted to meet you.
Yeah, I thought that was weird. I really did, you know, because he's kind of an institution. And, you know, I was nearly half afraid to go over and say hello to him. And it was Miriam who actually brought him over to me in the end. And sure, he was lovely, you know, and said some lovely things. And I'm standing there going, but you're Fintan O'Toole, you know.
But you're Fintan O'Toole. Very good. So how much do Dara and Amelia understand about this book award for you?
Well, sure, Amelia, Elaine Egan, my publicist, had put up a little snippet of my acceptance speech on Instagram. So Amelia obviously saw it straight away. She had been on it. And she just, Jim told me she just came downstairs, ma'am won, and went back upstairs again. There you go. That's how much excitement she has in it. And as for Dara, you know, as far as he was concerned, it was just another piece of glass. He wanted me to get a Champions League trophy.
Not going to happen, Dara. Wouldn't put anything past you, Vicky Field. I actually wouldn't put anything past you. Yeah. And just again, I have to say to people that you know, it's such a powerful book because we all know you from the last 18 months or so. But what we don't understand, unless you read the book, is what built you up and made you the person you are, what gave you the strength and the resilience to take on, you know, in effect, the government and other people, and you refused to be gagged. So it's it's a really strong book because it's your story. And I can't recommend your book highly enough to people. Everyone needs to read it. Everyone needs to read it.
Yeah, and you know what made it the book that it is, to be honest. Unfortunately, Naomi was just slightly late for my speech because she just had a baby 10 days ago, literally. So she was in between feeds. But she made it to for a couple of photos. But my ghostwriter, she was just fantastic. We just hit it off so well. I often felt that, you know, if I thought a thought, that she'd know what I was thinking. That's how good she was at getting into my head. So, I mean, a lot of credit has to go to the, you know, the beautiful way she was able to...
She got you. She got you.
Yeah, she did.
Now, do you mind me asking, because when we spoke last week, you said you were going for a scan. I know people
haven't had it yet.
Okay.
No. Right, okay. So that could be the third of December.
Third of December.
Before I go to New Zealand. So it's always, and I'm, you know, even though
a scary time.
Well,
yeah.
Now, but at the earlier stages in the week, I wasn't feeling that well actually for a couple of days. I was, you know, and of course your head goes to that place where you think, oh shit, you know, it's back. You don't go to the normal stuff like, you know, maybe it's just a flu or cold. You know,
I'm tired.
Yeah. But look, I took 2 days, literally went to the bed, and I've been fine now since. So touch wood, all good.
Good. Enjoy the glow after the award last night. Yeah.
Look, I will totally. I soak it all up, every single minute of it. It's great.
Great. And congratulations again. And thanks for taking the call.
Thank you.
Okay.
And thanks very much to all your listeners and the people who voted for me and everybody who has bought my book. It really means a lot to me, and all the lovely messages I'm getting from people who have read it. It just, it makes it all worthwhile, to be honest. So it's fantastic. Thank you very much.
Mind yourself, Vicky. Talk to you soon.
Thanks so much.
Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, somebody wants to know the name of Mark's book. Well, the one that we were talking about is called Dorothy Kilgallen, K-I-L-G-A-L-L-E-N, The Reporter Who Knew Too Much. And Mark Shaw is the man's name. Very interesting man. And Eamon Offaly says, streaming services are great, but if you live in the sticks like us, they aren't much use. That's the big story this week, isn't it? The broadband services. And it won't be fully complete until 2027. Which is a long time away. And Dale says, where I'm from, Leixlip, County Kildare, if someone sneaks out early from a night out, we say he's doing a Dexy. As in a Dexy's midnight runner.
Like it. Show it our age.
There you go. Right, we're joined in the studio by Alison Keaton, psychologist, and Ray O'Neill, psychoanalyst. Good afternoon to you both. And just before we came back from the break, both of you were saying that it's a very busy time of the year for both of you in what you do. Mm-hmm. All the stresses, is it leading up to Christmas?
It's a crazy time of year. Before Christmas, the anxiety around it, and then after Christmas, just the exhaustion from it. It kind of breaks people.
Mm. So what in the lead up, what sort of issues come up?
Well, just again, like it's like the nervousness, like anything. It's the build up that actually causes more anxiety. So whether that's around money, whether it's around people, a huge epidemic of loneliness. People, again, because they're seeing every ad is telling them how a family is. And if you don't have that family, it's exhausting. Or you've lost that family. That's really hard. Or if you do have that family, but it isn't quite the Hallmark Christmas version of that family, quite stressful.
So everything is brought into sharp focus.
Yeah.
And we sort of look at our lives and compare them.
It's the comparison.
Yes.
Yeah. And as we know, comparison is the thief of joy. And it really is.
Comparison is the thief of joy.
Mm-hmm.
But we live in a world of comparisons.
We do. Facebook, Instagram.
Yeah.
And I think that's it's always been there, but it's just heightened. So everywhere you turn around, and even if you're kind of saying, oh, bah humbug, or you're kind of saying, I'm not really getting into this year, that pressure is just there all the time, kind of nearly even subliminally, that, you know, like people are already, you know, putting up Christmas trees and, you know, but the pressure, and I suppose the pressure is on, for women, it's very specific. On men, it's very specific. You know, at work, it can be a very stressful time of year. People come, you know, at the end of the year, obviously the tax and everything. So there's just
All the stresses, yeah. The next time you come in, we might give people a sort of a survival kit.
Yes.
How to survive Christmas.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, psychologically.
There's a reason why Santi lives on the North Pole. Lot less stress there.
They're a lot less stress.
No broadband, though.
Okay. Now, these came in for you. Hi there. I'm a girl in my mid-30s suffering with severe anxiety about a lot of things in life. I've been to therapy to do CBT. It works on and off. I'm about 12 months out of a 10-year-plus relationship, and I really want to move on with my life. I've been in touch with a guy online. What I would really like to meet... in the next week or two, but I'm so scared about the whole thing. My confidence is at an all-time low. Confidence in looks, personality and so on. I've tried to go on this date once before, but I had to cancel. I really hope you can provide some advice for me. I'm aware of the concept, feel the fear and do it anyway. I just know I will be a shaky, sweaty mess if I go through with it and it won't be pretty. There's a lot of anxiety thinking of doing it, but equal anxiety of not doing it as I feel I'm stuck and not moving on. Thank you.
Mm. Yeah. Like Ray saying about Christmas time, the main core aspect of anxiety is anticipatory anxiety. So where this lady's at is the thought of doing what she's thinking of doing is worse than perhaps how it actually will be. A brilliant article I read before was What Happy People Do Differently.
Right.
And they actually take risks. So the risk is go on the date. You know, you do not have to look perfect. Your personality doesn't have to be shining. You know, you have to accept yourself as you are now, which is really difficult when you don't like how things are. But unfortunately, that's what everyone tries to do. They try to fix themselves first rather than actually saying, you know what, this is who I am. This is as I am right now. And then take those steps. And there's no guarantee it will work out. But that's where the joy in life is, kind of meeting those challenges, being a sweaty, shaky mess, kind of going, yes, I am a shaky mess here, and doing it, yes, doing it anyway.
But ultimately, isn't the real you the person that whoever your suitor is, whoever your boyfriend is going to be, your husband, will fall for? It's the real you. It's not some fabrication. It's not some contrivance that you put together for a date.
But we live in a Tinder generation where everything is being judged on appearances. Everyone wants everything now. And that's, you know, that's grand if you're looking for a one-nighter or a quickie. But for a relationship, it takes time, because you fall in love with someone when they're sweaty messes. And you know that you're only loved when you yourself are a sweaty mess with somebody else. All I can say to this person, there is no way around this anxiety. There's absolutely no way around it. You will have an amazing night and you will feel so good about yourself, regardless of what that fella says, because you broke your own fear. You turn up on dates for yourself.
Just for doing it. You will feel good about yourself just for doing it.
Exactly, because you're no longer stuck. And that's for everybody who is just humiliated from dating. Persevere, because you deserve it.
It is that, and look, it's easy to say it here, that it's the anticipation that gives us the anxiety, but that's mostly about everything, isn't it? So is there any hints we can give this person at all?
There's a great, if you Google Dr. Russ Harris, or USSHARRIS, and it's the struggle switch, and it's about how to, as I'm talking about that sense of acceptance of the anxiety, but how to actually work through it. It's just a small little like cartoon.
Right.
But it's really nice.
Okay,
really
Russ Harris.
Russ Harris. Yeah.
Or get a friend or a family member, someone you love and trust, to just walk you to the door and just be at another table. So you have no, but just if needs be. Yeah. You know, there is comfort in having someone supporting you.
Okay, and good luck with that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, best of luck.
Now, I'm struggling with my husband's drinking. He's a binge drinker. It doesn't happen every weekend, but when it does happen, I never know what state he will come home to me and my children. On occasion, he has come home in disgusting states and can also say horrible things to me. Then he'll fall into bed asleep after disturbing my sleep while I lie there feeling frozen in the bed, fearful of him but worried about his health. We've discussed this. He's aware of how I feel, but after the dust will have settled, he will do it again and say that's just how he is. He has a weekend away and I don't like to think of what will happen. I just hope that he will come home okay. In these occasions, I find I distance myself from him. It certainly affects our marriage. Any advice would be greatly appreciated. I read during the week that over 50% of people who drink in Ireland have a problem with drink.
Mm. And when you say about Christmas, it's the time of year where, you know, this gorge happens, you know, and it's really apparent that issues that often are there during the year. It's most heightened at this time of year.
When a country celebrates something like the 12 pubs of Christmas, and that becomes something that you want to meet your friends out, I despair.
Yeah.
I despair, given the level of alcoholism and the level of binge drinking in our country, that's a fun thing to do.
Mm. Yeah.
It's really interesting that you say that, because I saw something the other day and it said if someone lost weight, you'd say, oh, congratulations, well done, you know, you're working hard. Yeah. But if someone says, I'm going out tonight, I'm not going to drink, they're like, what's wrong with you?
Yeah, I know.
Are you serious? My gosh.
Yeah, it's the same. Giving up cigarettes, you're congratulated. Yes. You give up drinking, you go, explain yourself.
Exactly.
The only country in the world that does that.
Yeah. So for this poor woman, it's a huge problem, isn't it?
It's a massive problem.
And I'm sure this story is echoed around the country. Mm-hmm. So what advice do we have?
I mean, it's binge drinking. It is a problem. I think sometimes because binge drinking is so much part of our everyday language that we don't actually see that it is not okay. And that, look, he's not accepting the situation as it is, but she has to make a decision. Now, what I'm hearing here is fear. Why is she lying in bed scared beside him? So, you know, it's that uncertainty and that so many people experience if someone comes home and when they say it's not every weekend, that doesn't make it not a problem. Yeah. It actually makes it worse. I have no idea
Jack
how
the Ripper's wife used to say he didn't do it every weekend.
Mm. All right. No, but she says there in the opening line, the opening two lines, I never know what state he will come home to me and my children. And what I read there is what his attitude will be. It's not his state of inebriation, but it's will he be in good form, bad form? Will
aggression.
He be
violence. Yes. Fresh of violence.
Well, we don't know if there, there
no,
is.
No, but she's fearful.
Yes. Yeah.
There's one thing of someone being drunk, but you know you're safe. She's lying in bed beside him and she's scared.
Yeah.
So I think she has to seriously look at this and say, I can't actually accept this. And whether he accepts it or not, or, you know, accepts that he has a drink problem, she needs to make a decision on the next course of action.
He says, that's just how I am.
But the thing is, I don't know if he's drunk, that he knows exactly how he is. There was a great campaign around drinking, which they kind of used the recordings of Irish people being drunk with the canned laughter. Very powerful, because we do ridiculously dangerous things in terms of putting our bodies at risk, other people's bodies at risk. One of the things you might do is just record him.
That's great.
So that he actually sees, this is what you're like. This is what your children have to deal with. This isn't the man I married, but this is who you become after X amount of alcohol. And maybe, there's no guarantee.
Can I just cautionary, just be careful that he doesn't spot you filming him, you know?
Because
that could make him more aggressive.
Mm-mm.
It's like there's no quick fix really, is there? Because he has to decide that he has a problem.
Yeah, and in the interim time, there are places like Al-Anon, even if she doesn't identify her husband as an alcoholic, to just hear people who are struggling with partners and family who have alcohol issues. This man has an alcohol issue.
Yes, so Al-Anon. We direct you towards Al-Anon. I'm currently in counselling for gambling and other issues. I'm due to get married next year, but my counsellor reckons I try to sabotage relationships because I find it easier to be alone. I agree with all this and notice myself pushing my partner away. So this person has a counsellor, so they're looking to you for a second opinion.
And a third opinion.
Yes.
Look, the problem, particularly with gambling, is you'll gamble everything. It isn't just money. It isn't just on the horses. You'll gamble your health. You'll gamble your relationship. You'll gamble your sanity, your peace of mind. Work with this counsellor, because all of us are so afraid of being happy that oftentimes it's within us all to sabotage our own potential joy. If you have met a good person, really, really, you know, prioritise that. I hope she knows what she's getting into and that the pair of them have talked about it ahead of the marriage.
Yeah. He says, I try to sabotage relationships because I find it easier to be alone. Like, relationships, I hate saying this, but they demand a bit of effort. I'm not going to use work, but they demand a bit of effort, don't they?
They do.
And some people, when they encounter that effort that's required, they go, no, not for me.
And you know what? What's really interesting is that marriages that actually work really hard on their marriage and they're very committed to each other, they're the ones that actually fare well. So look, he sees that he is and knows that he sabotages. So as Ray is saying, working with his therapist, he can kind of go back to the roots of that. Why is that? Does he feel completely unlovable? I hear vulnerability here. You know, this is something that, you know, hopefully he can try and work upon, but it will require a lot of work, a lot of effort. But it's good that he actually recognises that the idea of being in a relationship is very painful to him. You know, because does he believe that actually love isn't real, it won't last? And that's where, you know, getting down to the levels
So he needs to work through it with his counsellor.
Exactly.
Yeah. It is easier to be alone because that way nobody can hurt you. But it is incredibly isolating. It's a scary place to be. So I understand what he's saying. Many people can identify that. It's just like potentially the first person that we spoke about in terms about going on the date. It is easier to be on your own. Mm. But what's easy isn't always what's right.
Okay. Hopefully that works out. Now, I'm separated for a few years and I have met a lovely man. However, we both have a lot of financial problems individually and I'm afraid of going down this road because of that only reason. We don't have much prospects of it changing and we're in our late 50s. He doesn't think like me at all. I'm afraid of making life worse rather than better as a estranged partner could cause problems. I don't know what to do. Again, I'd say this is common because people are coming out of relationships and that's financially messy. They have one house, then they have to split it. And so people are finding themselves at a latter stage of life where they're not financially sound, whereas previously they would have been. So what advice do we have here?
I mean, the recession is not mentioned anymore, but it is very much alive and kicking. And many people have financial problems. So this is just something that they have to discuss together. Again, it's bringing that real intimacy in, allowing yourself to be vulnerable and open and honest and say, look, this is the situation. What do you think about this? And at the end of the day, it's up to that other person to make a decision whether that works for them or not. But, you know, money is such an important thing in a relationship and it's just about laying your cards on the table and then taking it from there.
Hmm. And I suppose, again, whether it's about money and relationships, appreciating short-term, medium-term and long-term. Sometimes we lose the short-term joy of meeting a lovely person because we're worried about the long-term financial implications of that. Keep your eye on what's happening. You've met a lovely man. Enjoy that. My God, you seem to have deserved it, given the short piece that we've had. But yes, have conversations about where you might be moving towards financially and emotionally as a couple.
And it's cheaper to live as a couple than it is as individuals.
It is.
I would imagine. most times, isn't it?
No, it is. Absolutely. No, you're right.
Your partner doesn't have expensive tastes.
But I just think, you know, as Ray is saying, and it's so important, in the present moment, it's two people who found a relationship, and that is just so important and can be sometimes so rare. So the finances shouldn't come in front of that.
Okay. So enjoy what's happening at the moment. And don't worry about what
don't over worry. Yeah. Yes. Keep an eye on it, but
don't over worry.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks so much again for your sound advice, Ray O'Neill, Alison Keating. Thank you. We will talk to you soon. And the next time we're going to give them a survival kit on how to get through the Christmas period.
Yes.
Yes. when it comes to relationships. That's it from us. Mary Wilson is on the way. We are back on the radio tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Thursday evening.